Sibling Saber team is proud to present Worthy of Recognition, a look at the names and faces that make Star Wars an unforgettable experience and an integral part of our lives. Hey everybody, welcome back to Powerful Friends Friday and this edition of Worthy of Recognition. And man, am I excited this week to bring this to you and our good friend over at San Diego Sabres Radio Podcast. Say hi to Steve Kirk, everyone. Steve, how's it going?
Hello there.
Hello there, sir. What's going on?
Oh, just having a lovely evening here. How are things up in the Great White North?
Warmer, I suppose. It's still below freezing, but you know, it's a lot. It's funny that I can say it's warmer, and yet it's still below freezing. That's an example of how cold it's been and how snowy it's been.
I wondered how that was going to work.
Yeah, well, I can't really complain. You know, people complain at work all the time. It's too cold. There's too much snow and there's ice everywhere. I go, yeah, but think about where we are. Sure, we get four seasons and there's pros and cons to each, but we don't get earthquakes. We don't get hurricanes. We don't get any of that garbage. We're spoiled.
That's true. That's true. And I'll be honest, I've lived in the southwest of the U.S. for so long. I miss seasons.
Yeah, I guess.
We have summer. We have summer and non-summer.
Well, your winter time is what? What's the temperature like during the day there?
This week, it's been 75 to 80 Fahrenheit.
Oh, yeah. So for our Canadian friends and our UK friends, that is about 26, somewhere between 23 and 26 degrees.
Oh,
that's my wheelhouse. 23 to 26.
I get excited when we have rain one day. I'm like, oh, thank goodness. Oh, this is wonderful.
Oh, geez. Yeah, well, I've heard tales about Southern California when a drop of rain hits the windshield and everybody drives off the road. Has that been something you've witnessed?
That is not an exaggeration. Not people freak out. The government freaks out. So if there's a chance for rain in this area, the emergency response center, they've got a mailing list that I'm on. They send out this email. Oh, there's rain coming this week. Here are all the areas where you can go pick up sandbags.
Oh man.
Really?
Well, I guess if it's arid, dry ground, I guess flooding could be a problem. I guess I understand
it
that.
It can be, but it doesn't matter that it's not a torrent coming. It could be, hey, look, we might get half an inch of rain. Oh, dear God. Everybody board Noah's Ark. It's just funny how people totally overreact to rain here.
I don't remember where I first heard that. I think maybe it was the Jim Rome show, but way back when I used to listen to that. And he used to make fun of his, I think he was broadcasting from LA at the time. And he used to just say, everybody in Southern California, one drop of rain hits the windshield and everybody just drives off the road and smashes into each other. So how can that
be? Absolutely true statement. It's true. They don't get it. And there is a legitimate issue is when you live in an area where the roads are constantly warm and hot, it brings a lot of oil to the surface. So then you add a little bit of rain and you've got some pretty slick roads suddenly.
Yeah, that's exactly it, right? It's the oil and it's everybody driving on summer tires. You don't need all seasons or winter tires like we have.
Oh yeah, there's no concept here of summer and winter tires. None.
They're just tires. They're all just tires.
They're just tires.
And you could probably the weather is so pleasant there year round. The roads are probably nice and smooth. You could probably let your tires wear right down and it's still not a problem.
You go to the tire store and they'll say, you know, we've got a special on all weather tires.
What do I need that for?
That's cute. That's a funny joke.
Oh my goodness. All right, so how you doing with your honeymoon with The Last Jedi?
I still am enjoying The Last Jedi. I am very positive about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm right there with you. I the more I think about it, and I've been thinking about it a lot, the more I love it. a couple really oddities do. that I kind of squirm a little bit over, but overall, I'm super excited for March 27th when the Blu-ray drops. I'm excited for Rian Johnson's trilogy.
I know.
Oh, what a time to be a Star Wars fan.
It's so fantastic. You know, there's no movie in the world that's perfect, Star Wars or otherwise. So, yeah, there's things that I personally might have done differently. Okay, fine. But I love the direction it went. I like the way things were portrayed. I love the way that it was directed. The music was amazing. The visuals were outstanding. There are so many outstanding elements to me that any of the quote-unquote negatives are just completely overshadowed by all that.
Yeah, yeah. The negatives are a pittance compared to all the great stuff for me. All the stuff that... Everything just worked so well for me, aside from a couple of little nitpicks that really I can look past. You know, I think the soundtrack is one of the things that really, of course, really props the movie up. And in listening to the soundtrack over and over, it plays like as greatest hits of Star Wars.
It does, doesn't it?
It's got so many cues from the OT and a lot of vibes. Maybe nothing outright from the prequels, but the vibes are there. And of course, the stuff from The Force Awakens has been doubled down upon.
Yep,
it's just the greatest hits of Star Wars. I love it.
It really kind of is. And you know the song that's really kind of captured my heart?
Which one's that?
Because it's so incredibly different. And now you probably know which one it is. It's the Canto Bight song.
My kids love that song.
It gets me bouncing in my chair anytime I listen to it. And you listen to how different it is. And then you have to take a beat and realize this is still John Williams.
Yeah. Like he went nuts
with
this.
Oh my God. This is fantastic.
I wonder what direction he got from Rian Johnson. Like for sure. Like he cut. Rian Johnson had given John Williams a cut of the movie with Star Wars music cut into it. And said, this is kind of what we're looking for, or maybe a reworking of this theme, new instrumentation, whatever. I'm guessing, I don't know for sure, but I'm guessing that maybe he put the Cantina Band song in the background for Canto Bight and said this, but you know, on steroids. Like it is wacko, that stuff.
It I would have loved to have been a fly in the wall for that conversation.
And there's some, I can't name them now, but John Williams used some really unconventional stuff. You can hear it in the background. It's stuff that you wouldn't even think of as instruments.
Yeah.
The guy's a genius. He's a mad genius.
He truly, truly is.
All right. Well, on that note, let's break into your Mount Rushmore of Star Wars, so to speak. So you know the ground rules. You can say anybody you want in any particular order, but for reasons known, we can't use George Lucas because, frankly, he should be on everybody's list, and it would be a really boring show if everybody was saying, "Oh, it's George Lucas," because you know, well, he made it all.
Yeah, I mean, credit where credit is due, and move on, right?
Yeah, he's elevated. He's beyond our Mount Rushmore. He's on Mount Olympus of Star Wars, and we don't go that high. The air is just too thin.
Yeah.
All right, so take it away. Give us your first name.
Oh man, this took me a while to think about because it's almost like somebody saying, "What's your favorite movie of all time?" No, there is no such thing. So trying to narrow this down was an incredible exercise and really forced me to think about my entire Star Wars journey over the last 40, almost 1 years now.
Yes, this is what I was hoping for. Make people dig deep and pull up some gold nuggets. Because another story, I'll say it again. Like when I started this branch of the podcast, Corey was saying, "Well, that's a dumb idea. Everybody's just going to say Luke, Han, Leia, and you know, insert one other name. Everybody's going to do that, and it'll be really boring." I said, "Well, if that's what it is, then you know, we'll learn pretty quick." But so far, everybody's brought pretty unique stuff to the table.
I'll try not to overlap too much.
Oh, but that's the thing. Like, everybody has their own reasons for it, or their own connection to that person, which is the gold here.
You literally took the words out of my mouth. I was going to say that's where the gold is.
Absolutely.
So number one, not necessarily in order of rank, but for me, this was the first thing that popped into my mind. Number one is Obi-Wan for me.
Now, is it the Alec Guinness, or are we talking both, or just the entire character?
It's the character. So by definition, that includes Alec Guinness and Ewan McGregor.
And maybe James Arnold Taylor?
Yeah, I'll buy that. Yeah. No, I'll buy that.
And let's throw in Stephen Stanton for a good measure.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's the overall character. So everyone who had a piece in creating and demonstrating and bringing us this character gets credit for this. So the very first thing, so I'm old enough, I saw this in the theaters when I was 6 years old. And I think that creates an interesting experience versus what people have today. Even if the prequels were their first Star Wars movie they saw in theaters, it's a completely different universe in the sci-fi realm. So in 1977, sci-fi was not what we know as sci-fi, right? So at 6 years old, this was effectively my first, and let's avoid the whole sci-fi versus space opera discussion, but it was my first movie of this type, and it was awesome. So this became the baseline by default. This was it.
Well,
there seemed to be,
and I wasn't around when A New Hope dropped, but there seemed to be an accessibility to Star Wars that other sci-fi fantasy stuff did not have.
You're right. That's part of what has made Star Wars such a phenomenon, is it broke that ceiling, if you will, and it was a kid's story that was incredibly accessible to adults. It was classic hero versus villain, good versus bad, that we all just got, and we all connected to in some way.
Did we ever?
yeah.
It's amazing how these
and
movies
here we
have hooked us as kids and continue to hook us as adults. I don't know that anything has ever done that. And it's characters
even since then, like
Obi-Wan.
It is. So the very first thing we hear about Obi-Wan, as you're watching through episode 4, is really Uncle Owen's description of that crazy old wizard. Now, me being me, I heard that line, and I still hear this line, and my first thought is, crazy old wizard. Ooh, I want to know this guy.
Yeah.
He sounds like a cool guy. Let's go check him out. And I don't know if one influenced the other or the other influenced the one, but throughout my life, as I played D&D and video games and role-playing games and all that, I've always tended towards mages, wizards, magic users. And how else do you categorize that old hermit Ben Kenobi?
He's very much that Merlin figure in A New Hope.
He's very mystical, mysterious. You know nothing about his background. There was something about these things called Clone Wars, whatever that means.
Yeah, those really, what is the word I'm looking for? Word escapes me. But there's something about the Clone Wars that evoked this great mystery in you as a kid. What were the Clone Wars? What was that all about?
Yeah, love to hear that story. But they clearly were epic. He was a general and... You know, he's this mystical wizard. He was a general, so he must be very powerful, and he's clearly this legendary character.
Yeah, there's a gravitas to it that, you know, even as kids watching, you know, you're watching Alec Guinness, who's a legend, but we didn't know that as kids. He was just an old man,
some dude.
But you bought into it. You knew that this guy was the real deal. He was special.
And that's the power of the storytelling right there, is you automatically, not even consciously, you filled in your own headcanon and said, okay, this guy's cool.
And he was. Obi-Wan was super cool.
Yeah, still is. So then prequels, and here comes Ewan McGregor portraying Obi-Wan, and oh my God, can it be any more perfect?
Did they nail that or what?
I have never, like, if you ask me which is a better portrayal, Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan or Hugh Jackman as Logan, I'd probably still go with Ewan.
He was good.
Because I can't think of anyone else who could have nailed Obi-Wan that way.
Remember those early, early rumors before The Phantom Menace that it was going to be Kenneth Branagh?
I do remember that. And I thought,
I remember going, okay, that kind of gives me an idea of ages. And sure, he looks like he could play the role. And I didn't know his body of work super well, but I knew that he was a respected actor. But I'm glad they dodged that.
Yeah, that was a smooth move right there.
And it makes sense because now Ewan's primed to play Obi-Wan in that gap between episodes 3 and 4.
I'm hoping.
I mean, it's inevitable. It's coming, Steve. They're not going to get away with it.
I think there is a better than even chance of it happening with all the little leaks that we've heard. And I know Lucasfilm has to be quiet about it. It's the wrong time for them to talk about it right now.
Yeah. Yeah. They've got just a little bit too much cooking right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've got The Last Jedi, you know, for better or worse. Hmm. You know, they're trying to manage the good and the bad of that. They've got Han Solo right around the corner and Rebels in between to deal with. So to sneak in another announcement, a huge announcement like that.
Yeah.
That just might be a little bit too much on their plate.
It depends on what the timing's going to be. You know what? Here's the way I would think of it. Because you also have to consider what else is on the roadmap that we don't know about. And they've got to be managing this roadmap for 5 years out. And so they have ideas of what's coming beyond JJ number 9. We have no clue. But they've got to manage all that. So I might argue, let the next 6, 8, 9 months play out as is. Let TLJ run its thing. Let Han Solo come out and get to and maybe through the theaters. Then we still have a year plus before JJ number 9 comes out. Somewhere in there might be a good time to re-energize some stuff with a Kenobi announcement.
Yeah. Yeah, that's sort of one thing I dread now in this whole podcasting game. You know, we talk about the news every week and we always somehow find something to talk about. But we have an 18-month gap coming, which now seems like, you know, we've dealt with drought before. We've gone from 83 to 99 and then from 05 to 2015. So we've dealt with gaps. That's not really the issue. But now it's 18 months. Whoa.
Well, let me make you feel better about that. So let's think about this a little bit. So the end of March, TLJ comes out on disc. Fantastic. That's going to extend the time we talk about that because we're going to get deleted scenes and we're going to get 2 hours of bonus material. That's going to feed us for a while. And then Han Solo comes out. Well, we're not going to talk about Han Solo for 2 weeks and then be done with it. That's going to feed us for a little while. So then you can imagine come spring of 19, Celebration will be coming out. That's a great time to start doing marketing for JJ number 9. So do we really have 18 months of drought? We might have 6 or 8 months of relative drought before they start, you know, by the time Han Solo really kind of winds down and we're quote unquote out of new material, but then that'll come out in video. There'll be deleted scenes. Okay, that'll feed us for a little bit longer. So maybe, and maybe I'm being optimistic, maybe it's not as bad as we think it could be.
I hope not. Things are usually worse in your head than they actually turn out to be. And I'm sure they have a plan to keep feeding the furnace all the way through so that there's no die-off or, well, you know, but now I think about it. Sometimes the absence makes the heart grow fonder might apply. And maybe they do figure that fandom needs a bit of a break. So maybe they do just give us radio silence for a few months.
Mm.
It seems sort of counterintuitive.
But they did that with The Last Jedi. They gave us the teaser at Celebration in April, and we heard nothing until D23 in July with the BTS trailer.
That's true, eh? There was maybe some... Was EW even doing their thing at that point? Was Bresnikan whipping out his awesome writing at that point? I don't even think so.
His big bomb was in early August, wasn't it?
Yeah, he had a couple of them, and I think, yeah, August, and then again in maybe October.
Yeah, that sounds right. I think, when was Vanity Fair? Vanity Fair was early, was that the July issue?
Might have even been sooner than that. I want to say maybe May?
No, not May. It wasn't May. Possibly June.
Yeah, maybe. Somewhere in there.
But it gave us some interesting interviews and a lot of the pictures to talk about. So the smallest little tidbits, we gobble right up. And
we make them to the biggest deals.
It's both silly and wonderful at the same time.
It absolutely is. So back to Obi-Wan.
Yes.
Favorite Obi-Wan moments. And it's funny because we just got asked this in consecutive weeks on our podcast. What is your favorite Alec Guinness and then your favorite Ewan McGregor moments?
Okay. And because I help run a lightsaber school, I will tell you one of my favorite moments is the Kenobi Maul fight.
Mm-hmm. That's high on a lot of people's lists.
Oh, beautiful.
Duel of the Fates.
Just beautiful. No, not TPM, the Rebels.
Oh, Twin Suns.
Twin Suns.
Oh, yeah. That
Twin Suns.
Yeah, I guess as the saber technique master here, you would probably think... We all look at the long, drawn-out, choreographed fights and go, ooh. But you look at it
which
from
that... Which are flashy and sexy.
Yeah, exactly. But then you see the master do three strokes and done. And you go, there you go. That's how it's done.
That is literally how it's done.
Yeah, and that's, I think that's what Dave Filoni said in the aftermath of all that when you watch those old samurai movies, you see these face-offs. They're not these big, drawn-out affairs. It's a couple strokes and the fight's over. And that's true mastership. You know,
if you go to our Facebook page or YouTube channel, I've got some videos up there of our guys fighting either within our own school or at tournaments. And if you think of it as a point being a session, you know, it's strike, done. That's how it works.
Yeah. When you think about the whole idea of swinging swords at each other, that's really all it takes. It's unrealistic to think that you'll go for 20 minutes and not get hit. And die.
It's a very athletic thing. So you could, if you fought for 2 minutes, you'd be starting to go, okay, how do we end this?
Not to mention you'd be exhausted.
Yeah, that's just it. It wears at you. It's an incredibly athletic process. So, and when you see the flashy, sexy stuff on screen, okay, it's great, but all they keep doing is hitting stabers. Okay. Looks great on screen, but if you are facing off with a true opponent, your goal is not to strike their sabers, but to strike their body.
Yeah, that makes all this. Yeah, this. I mean, it's used for I guess attack and defense, right? And you want to get the opponent, I guess, in the body, and that's it. End it.
Yeah. So if you do it right, it's quick like that. So that Twin Suns fight is definitely one of my top Obi-Wan moments, I would say.
That's a good call. Mm. That is a really good call. A lot of people default to something from A New Hope, and a lot of people go to Duel of the Fates, but I like that you went in there and pulled out that master moment in Twin Suns.
My number two favorite would be right as Obi-Wan, right before he gets struck by Vader in the New Hope fight, he glances at Luke and gives this small smile, this little smirk. He knows what he's doing, and he knows what's coming.
Yep, his grand finale mic drop moment. Watch this.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That is beautiful to me.
Yeah, that's again Alec Guinness. doing what I guess legends do, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Obi-Wan's a good call. And you can see his face kind of hammered into a mountain too, can't you?
You can't, yeah, it works, doesn't it?
It really does. But yeah, I'll never forget that first time I saw Obi-Wan meandering into the canyon. And that, you know, his hood is up, you can't see his face, and he's kind of staggering over the rocks. And it's a perfect image of a crazy old wizard coming at you.
Yeah, just some weird old hermit. Watch out for this guy. You don't know what he's going to do.
And it's funny because, again, you take him into Mos Eisley. Here's this guy that everybody thinks is just this crazy, weird old man. But damn if he's not the most traveled, most or definitely the wisest and most savvy guy in that cantina.
Yeah, you almost start to think he's in his element.
Yeah.
You know?
And he's, well, yeah, you think back to Attack of the Clones when he's in the club and he's like, I'm going to get a drink. And he's at the canteen and he's like, let me get you something. It's all about the drink for this guy. No wonder his last name is Guinness.
Yeah, I don't mind that either.
That sounds pretty good, actually.
Right.
All right, so let's before we move on, I assume you want to see this Obi-Wan standalone just like the rest of us. What would you want to get out of that?
I guess I want to explore. And maybe that, I don't know if it makes for a good script, but I'd love to explore those years when he's watching Luke. So I think there is an inferred relationship between Uncle Owen and Obi-Wan.
Yeah, it's been explored obviously, a little bit in comics, I believe, and both canon and legend. But yeah, there's a bit of a relationship, and it's not very warm and cuddly.
And I think that would be interesting to understand better. It'd be interesting to see on screen. Obviously, Obi-Wan dropped Luke off there, so they know each other from that point. And by the time we see Owen again in A New Hope, can't stand the guy, stay away from him. You're not allowed to like the music he listens to. You know, yeah. there's a bit of animosity there. So something happened to burn that bridge, and that would be interesting to explore. And then he's obviously familiar with Mos Eisley. Okay, so he's been there. He's interacted. I'm assuming he's going there for more than just picking up groceries. Are there any interesting stories? Almost like a Kenobi movie made in the style of, from a certain point of view, the book. You know, there could be some mini stories, which is where I kind of caution and backtrack going. I don't know if that would make a great movie, but hearing some of those stories in those 16, 20 years.
Could make for a really good Netflix series. Or, sorry, a streaming series once Disney gets a hold of their own streaming service.
I wish I could remember who said it. I know it was one of our fellow Commonwealth hosts who suggested the rumor of Stephen Daldry being connected to this project.
Yeah, so that was Mark on his daily, and I think that was off a suggestion from Nathan that maybe that's where this is all going. That maybe Stephen Daldry is going to format this for a TV series, and
that could work.
And maybe you could do it. It could be the type of thing that it spans the entire 19 years. Or whatever it is, time spent. That's an angle that's not been considered yet. That maybe it's, you know, a 10 episodes, and each one sort of explores his first couple, his year one or two on Tatooine, and so on until we get much closer to A New Hope.
Mm-hmm.
That would be really interesting.
The more this sits in my head, the more I like it. I almost like it more than a standalone movie.
Yeah, that's a great question too. Do you want the movie or do you want the TV series? And I think most people go, "Oh, give me the Star Wars movie. There's something really special about Star Wars and cinemas." And on first knee-jerk reaction, you go, "Yeah, of course." But then just do some math. If you got 10 one-hour episodes, you get 10 hours of Obi-Wan content versus two, maybe two and a half.
And the other thing with a good movie, even if it's a fantastic movie, it will leave questions open.
There's just not enough ground, right?
Right. So if we get a standalone movie, even if it's a fantastic story and we love it and it's brilliant, we're going to be left with questions and going, I need more. I got to have more. You didn't answer this thing about, you know, whatever happened between Obi-Wan and Satine. Is there a story there to be told? You didn't tell us that.
Yeah, he didn't talk about her at all. We didn't see him reflecting upon that.
Yeah, How dare you not answer that question?
There are things that would get left out. So the more I think about Obi-Wan TV series, the more I go, oh, that's something that would get me to pay good money for Disney streaming service.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd be on. Take my money.
I mean, they're taking it anyway, right? Disney's going to own me. Between Google, Disney, and, boy, there's maybe two or three companies on this planet that just, they own me. It's over.
Yeah, you put all those fees together, and it's like house payment, car payment, and entertainment payment.
Pretty much.
In that order.
Pretty much. All right, let's move on. Let's hear from your second face on your Mount Rushmore.
Number two. This one is, it's a combination Carrie and Leia. It's really hard to separate the two.
It really is. All these legacy actors, you know? It's really hard to separate one from the other.
Yeah. And maybe we're blessed because Leia really has only been portrayed by Carrie. So she completely owns that character.
Yeah, I guess if you were my brother, you would loophole it and say that Kat Tabor, I think, or is that the actress that does her voice in Rebels?
In Rebels, she's had a couple of lines.
Yeah, it's a stretch. It's Carrie Fisher's thing.
Yeah, it's still Carrie.
Yeah, it's Carrie.
So, you know, if I kind of cut to the chase, Carrie / Leia represent hope.
Absolutely. Punctuated with Rogue One, right?
Yes. All the way through. From A New Hope, through the entire original trilogy, and you could potentially even say, you know, her and Luke's birth in Revenge of the Sith still represent hope. And Rogue One, and TFA, and Last Jedi. It's always about hope. One of her earliest bits of dialogue is her projection, her message to Obi-Wan, help me, Obi-Wan, you're my only hope. There's a sense of, she portrays, even in this darkest hour, even in the face of incredible odds, she still has hope. And the way she portrayed the character, and we've all talked about how amazing Carrie was in A New Hope and so on and so forth, she just exudes and brings to the entire story that there is a way through this evil. We can succeed. And if you kind of then take this into real life and say, look, one of the main reasons we watch entertainment of this nature is to escape real life, right?
Absolutely.
And so having something that we connect to like this with such a message of hope connects us back to our real lives and our own personal struggles and can revitalize us. And through her portrayal and through her work that she's done, she can deliver us hope in a very personal sense beyond the screen.
Yeah, she will. She will live forever with not only Star Wars fans, but with everybody, as somebody who always had hope that there was a better day. Just one more day from now, it'll be better, and I'll keep fighting.
Mm-hmm.
Have you read Leia, Princess of Alderaan?
It's in my queue still. Right now I'm trying to get through From a Certain Point of View, and then I think that's going to be in my next one. I've got 5 or 6 Star Wars books in queue right now.
You sound like me. I've got Rebel Rising and Guardians of the Wills. And I've got Dark Disciple and A New Dawn. Mm. Yep. Mm-hmm. And the list goes on and on. And there'll be more coming for sure. But right now I'm going through Leia, yeah. And it's fascinating.
I read Bloodlines, which was amazing.
Incredible.
And I think once I finished that, I bought Prince of Alderaan. I said, okay, this has got to be next. Oh, wait, maybe one or two others first.
Yeah, it's really good. It's Claudia Gray is pretty much a wizard when it comes to writing Star Wars. I just wish they would just give her, I don't know, how many books can she handle? Just give her a 10-book deal, a 5-book deal, something. Because I will take as much Claudia Gray Star Wars writing as she can possibly muster.
I bet she's got stuff in the works.
I really hope so.
I bet you.
What she's doing with Leia is really, it's fascinating. It's taking the Leia that we meet in A New Hope and deconstructing it just a little bit and seeing her build into the character that we meet. And it carries through to The Last Jedi. You can see some of the mistakes that Leia calls Poe out for in The Last Jedi. She's making a little bit herself in Princess of Alderaan. And it's nice to see that circular type of thing where she she wasn't always perfect, but she figured it out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a great call. Did you ever get a chance to meet Carrie Fisher?
I never did.
I came close.
I intended to go to Celebration Europe and would have at least met her there, but then my Europe trip fell through, so...
She was scheduled to come here, I think in 2014, I want to say, to our Comic-Con, and I was super excited for that. And then, it fell apart. Maybe it was a bit earlier. Maybe it was 2013. It was whenever they were actually... I can't remember if it was news had broken for The Force Awakens or they were actually shooting it. But the understanding was she's not coming because there's actual news work with Star Wars to do and she regrets it. She'll come back in the future. And I left it at that. I was like, okay, with all this stuff going on with Star Wars, she'll do the rounds again and for sure I'll see her again. Not so much.
You just never know.
Yeah, and we're just over a year past her death, and it's a little bit easier now, but I'm looking at her on my poster on my wall, and it's not...
It still hurts.
It still hurts, and to think that she was the baby of that group.
There's nobody
younger in that movie.
Yeah.
Not one
person. And I still look at her, and I go, you're 19.
Yeah.
In A New Hope. I'm like, wow.
Remarkable, that she was able to just stand toe to toe with those actors throughout the whole movie. Her being the only girl, and she's 5'2" or something. She's this puny little human being, but she just had such a big, commanding personality. She just
part of what did it for her and made her so amazing. Have you read any of her personal books?
I have not.
I'm halfway through a lot of books. I'm halfway through The Princess Diaries, her last book that she published right before she passed away, the one where she outed her affair with Harrison Ford.
Yes, I've heard that one is quite...
It's fantastic. It is, in Yoda's words, it is a page-turner.
I've heard that about that book. A lot of interesting stuff, a lot of I don't want to say dirt, but it's really revealing.
It's history.
Yeah, well, that note, have you seen that, what was it called? The
documentary with
Bright,
her.
Was it Bright Lights?
I forget the name, but no, I haven't. And in fact, somebody asked me about that yesterday. I was like, oh man, I've got to go get that and watch it. I've been meaning to.
Yeah, it's called Bright Lights, starring Carrie Fisher and Debbie Reynolds. Yeah. And that was only slated to come out. She passed away in 2016, late 2016. I think it was only supposed to come out mid 2017, but because of her passing, they said, you know what? The world needs this.
Pull it up
now. And so they released it very shortly after her death. It's actually really good.
I've got to bring that to the top of the queue and watch.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an hour and change and
that's easy.
Yeah. But it was tough to watch, just so soon. Yeah. Like the wound was still so raw after she passed away. Like watching all that, and going, oh God.
I mean, I'll, celebrity deaths don't faze me. I just don't have connections with people like that. It's like, oh, well, you know, that's really sad. I'm sorry to see them pass. I cannot believe how I reacted to this. I was not expecting that from somebody who I've never met. And I'd hear, or I'd specifically listen to Leia's theme, and it would just bring me to tears.
I was afraid.
It's incredible.
I was afraid of how I would react in The Last Jedi when we knew that, you know, obviously Leia was going to be all over that movie, as would her theme. Mm-hmm. And I thought I would just be like mm-hmm. a blubbering mess.
But I did too.
I didn't. I wasn't. But
really?
Oof, it cuts pretty deep.
There were a few moments which brought tears still. I've seen it three times, and even on the third time, even when I know what's coming and I've experienced it, just one little tear right there. I'm like, it's still there.
Ryan, damn you.
Oh, bless you and damn you at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there's a lot of those moments in The Last Jedi. And sadly, that's going to be it for Leia. Well, what do you foresee for her in Episode 9? How are we going to deal with this?
You want my prevailing theory?
Well, I want your theory, and I want your wish.
Or my approach. My approach. Let me put it that way. I think even Leia or Carrie aside, you've got to have some sort of time jump here. It just, from a story point of view, that's what you need at this point. 3 to 5 years would be appropriate. I would not go beyond 5 years. It's too much. And much more beyond 5 years, you start having to age the younger characters, and that gets difficult/expensive. And that can be problematic if you don't cross the uncanny valley.
Yeah, you open yourself up to having them look inconsistent from one scene to the next.
Yeah. So you don't want to age them too far. So I think you could go as much as 5 years without worrying about either CG or prosthetics. So, okay, fine. So, assuming everybody sticks to what they've come out and said, they won't digitize her. Good. I think that would be... it would be unfortunate. And
there's no good way to handle it, I don't think.
But I think I have an approach. So I'll tell you what I don't want to see. So I don't want to see them digitize her. I don't want to see them kill her off in between off screen and just have the crawl store open with General Organa has died.
God, no, please. No,
you got to tell something just a little bit. Doesn't have to be a huge arc, but you got to touch on it in on screen.
I think so. The character deserves that, right?
So if you can't show her, because you've committed to not doing that, if you don't recast, they've said they're not going to recast her and they're not going to CGI her. Great. Fantastic. What you could do is still use her voice. You could create a scene. Maybe there's a battle. And there's a distress call, and maybe there's cut off communication. So you hear her, but you can't see her. And this gives you that 2 minute opening sequence where her command ship ends up being destroyed. And now the rebellion has to react to that and continue rebuilding without her. That could work.
It could. You'd have to get the other actors in that scene would have to really sell it.
Yes.
And I don't know who's in there to do that. I guess maybe Poe is one of them.
Yeah, that would make sense.
I mean, you could maybe put whoever you want.
Maybe he's got his own command by now.
Yeah.
And this leads into him solidifying that position of leadership that Ryan has instigated.
Very possible. In hindsight now, a great little move that he made there in a symbolic handoff anyway of Leia saying, what are you looking at me for? Follow him.
Oh, that was brilliant, wasn't it?
Now we can stuff as much meaning into that little line as we want to now. That not only is that a symbolic passing of the torch, that is an actual literal passing of the torch if we want it to be now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's really kind of fun talking about The Last Jedi with people who are not in as deep as we are, where they see these little things and they assume they were done on purpose because she passed away.
Nah.
And then I have to explain.
You see, by the time she passed, the movie was, mm-hmm. It was all...
It was wrapped. It was done. Sorry.
Not quite what happened. Like, when mm-hmm. they've told us what we shot of Carrie is what her role is. We're not changing a thing. And they didn't, as far as we know. And she's right through, she survived the movie. A lot of people thought that maybe they'd go back and edit the movie a little bit to make it seem like she was gone, or no. Like she's obviously right there, alive and kicking, good to go into episode 9. But
and you know what? If it were JJ directing the movie and he said, no, I didn't do any editing because she passed away.
Yeah, JJ, we've heard you say these kind of things before.
I'd be 50-50 on if that was true or not. But one of the things we've heard a lot about, and I think we've seen in TLJ, is that Ryan is a hardcore fan. He loves this franchise in his heart.
Oh, yeah.
So I am willing, if he says he didn't change anything, and he was still in edit at the time, so he could have, but if he came out and said, we haven't and we won't, I'm willing to believe him.
Sure. I'm definitely willing to believe that.
Yeah.
A lot of people were saying in the aftermath saying that when Kylo or when the Raddus got shot and she got sucked into space, that should have been it. That's how you write out Leia.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
Well, wait a sec. That it arguably, it might be her best performance as Leia. And definitely her last. And that's to be her last scene. You're gonna take away her reunion with Luke. You're gonna cut out the rest of her brilliant scenes. No.
Can't do it. It would rewrite the film.
Yeah, and there's a huge domino effect.
Yep.
So yeah, no, I'm glad they left it in, but it gives I guess it gave Colin Trevorrow fits on how to deal with that. And
yeah,
cost him his gig.
I wish I knew enough people to figure out what really happened there, but I have to imagine that was the linchpin of him getting walking papers.
You think so? I mean, that is one of the theories, that it just, the way they dealt with it wasn't to his liking or to Lucasfilm's liking, and they wanted it changed. I don't know. I have no clue what I don't know his work well enough. I obviously don't know him at all.
Yeah.
What could have been so unsatisfactory to get the guy shown the door?
I'm even willing to entertain that he was stumped by how to do it. That he's the one that said, you know, look, we've been fussing with this for 6 months and we've gone back and forth and back and forth, and I can't do it. I can't figure out a way to do this.
Yeah, you won't let me recast her. We can't CG her. I don't want her I don't want to write up her death in the opening crawl.
Mm-hmm.
I'm stumped, guys. I would be surprised if he just tapped out. Then again, you have to say uncle. I don't know what to do, guys.
Especially in a Star Wars movie. How do you walk away from doing a Star Wars movie? But if you understand the magnitude of this thing that you're having to deal with, you don't want to be the guy who got it wrong.
Oh, no. No.
So I could see, you know, if I had signed up to do it, if I put myself in his shoes and I had a director's ego, but then this happened, and if I just hit a wall, you know what? Maybe we talk about a project again in the future, but I don't think I can do this to the quality it needs to be done. So I would, if he tapped out, I would really respect that.
Yeah, because right now I think he gets a bit of a rough ride.
Yeah.
One of the reports is that his ego was just out of control and he was thinking a little too highly of himself.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Directors do that.
Yeah. I guess he wouldn't be the first and probably won't be the last.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows how that message gets out there, right? I don't want to say Lucasfilm was putting out little hit pieces about the guy or leaking things to the press to make themselves look better. I doubt that. I don't want to put a tinfoil hat on about all this.
Yeah.
But it's hard to imagine that dealing with Leia's fate didn't play a huge role in Trevorrow being ousted.
Yeah, exactly. That has to be a big part of it.
So do you have any favorite Leia scenes?
Wow. You know, I'll do two. There's the classic and the modern. So the classic favorite Leia scene would be in A New Hope. Because I'm that weirdo where A New Hope is my favorite movie, not ESB.
That's not weird.
It seems like I'm in the minority, but that's all right. That doesn't stop me. In the detention cell scene when they're pinned down in the hallway and she just grabs the blaster and says, fine, I'll get us out of here.
Yeah.
That is stealth. You've never seen a heroine do something like take charge and do that.
Yeah, all she needed them to do was just open the door and let her out, and I'll take it from here, dummies.
Yeah, but she grabs a blaster, takes charge of the situation, and down the chute they go. It's like, wow, that exemplified Princess Leia was not a quote-unquote princess. She had no problem getting her hands dirty. She knew what she was doing. She's in charge. Love that.
Yeah, that's a classic Leia scene.
So that's my classic scene. My more modern scene... It's almost a tearjerker. It's in The Force Awakens when she and Han are having the moment at the Rebel base on Dakar as he's about to fly away to Starkiller Base, and he pulls her in and she rests his head on her head on his chest.
Yeah, I remember seeing that in the trailer and going, that's a goodbye hug right there.
That hits you in the feels.
Yeah. Because we knew, or at least I had a very, very strong sense that TFA was going to be Harrison's one and only appearance as Han.
Mm-hmm.
And that hug was Han leaving for whatever reason. And
foreshadowing.
Yeah. I felt that at the time. And it's true.
So that whole scene, you see Leia, she walks in as a general, but then it hits you in the feels at the end of that scene, and she's still vulnerable at the same time, and it kind of encompasses this whole range of the character.
Yep, for sure.
So yeah,
and yeah, it's gonna be tough, man, moving through episode 9. I mean, the door was wide open for Leia just to do her thing in that movie.
I know. We'll never know.
Just so heartbreaking.
Yep.
But very worthy of recognition, as we like to say here.
As we say.
All right. Number three.
Now, it's a little bit of a repeat, but it's still incredibly personal to me. The Maestro.
Yes.
Mr. John Williams.
Yes, sir. You might be the first person to it.
No. Tim brought it up when he was on.
All right. Yep. Sorry, Tim.
Yep. I did some research. But I had it on my list before I heard him mention it, so it's not because of him. So music has always been a very deep personal thing with me. It's that thing that can just influence my mood. It can bring me to tears. It can make me jump up and down and dance around. It's one of the most impactful things of life to me. And throughout my adult career, I've really had a lot of experience appreciating music for what it is and its impact on entertainment. 15, 20 years ago, that's a great soundtrack, but you never really consciously noticed it a lot during movies. It was mood music for the most part, and you subconsciously absorbed it.
Yeah, you take it for granted almost.
Now, we're so much more aware of it, and the risk that Lucas took using a symphonic score, which had just not been done in this genre before, and the genius of what John Williams done, try and imagine Star Wars with anyone else doing it or doing it differently.
I've tried. It doesn't work.
It doesn't work. No.
It does not compute.
John Williams' score is Star Wars.
It really is.
You cannot separate the two. I might argue, anecdotally, that it is the Star Wars score is perhaps one of the most recognized pieces of music across the planet.
Well, we're two Star Wars fans, two diehard Star Wars fans here. So you're not going to get an argument from me. And I'm a huge Star Wars soundtrack junkie. Well, you and I have talked online about vinyls and that super crazy fancy 3-disc vinyl set for A New Hope's 40th.
It's so good.
Well, I guess we can talk about that here, but I think I agree. I couldn't really tell you another cinematic score that would have a greater recognition globally.
If you think about, if you walked into a pub in an alley in London and you broke out your phone and played the Imperial March, everyone would know what that is.
100%.
If you went to the Vatican, they would get it. If you went to a shop in Tokyo and you played the Star Wars theme, people would gather around you and start asking you questions. I can't imagine going anywhere except maybe sub-Saharan Africa, and even then.
Well, maybe in China.
Recognize it.
The last two movies haven't done super well, so maybe in China they wouldn't know.
Yeah, that's very sad, but they don't know what they're missing. So the other thing that makes this really personal for me is I have had the blessing to see John Williams live twice at the Hollywood Bowl conducting the LA Philharmonic.
Nice.
Doing all of his movie scores.
Oh
my God.
That's got to be something special.
So hearing him do Superman and Raiders and E.T. and all the classics, fantastic. Oh, man, this brings me back. You get jazzed up. That's just the appetizer. The whole second half of the show is then Star Wars. And as he opens the second half of his show, a majority of the audience busts out their lightsabers.
That's what they're waiting for. That's what everybody's there for, right?
So this is that whole musical symbiotic reaction when you're at a live show where the conductor and the orchestra are into it and the music they play feeds the energy of the audience who then react and pump out this more energy, which primes the symphony to do and the players and the artists to do even better. And it just becomes this very symbiotic relationship. And people get out of their seats as the Imperial March plays, and this whole troop of lightsabers start marching around the Hollywood Bowl in time to the Imperial March. And you have been taken to a new universe. You are crying out of joy. This is where you are meant to be in this moment. And both those times have been so emotional for me. It literally brought tears to my eyes, and just, it's so overpowering. So if you ever get the chance to see him, and he is getting up there in age. The last time I saw a show was year and a half ago. And it was an effort for him to get through the show, but he did it. He did it. He loves doing it, but it was pushing him physically. So if you ever get the chance, jump on it.
Yeah, I don't know that he'll travel this far north, but if he does, you know, I will be there with bells on. That is for sure. Now, I've seen Star Wars music performed live twice, not by John Williams, of course, It's still a treat to see. I saw one local orchestra that, you know, they play locally in and around Montreal, but there's no, it's only wind instruments. And so they,
oh, interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's harder to find string sections. So they do everything only with wind. And I think they do have a piano and they do have some percussion, but mostly it's wind, and they do a really, really good job. So that was fun to see. And I also got the chance, I think in 08 or 09 or so, to see Star Wars in concert, which which was a lot of fun. A lot of fun. Before the prequel announcements, it was sort of in that dead zone where we just thought, this is what Star Wars will be for us going forward. It's going to be these one-off experiences, animated shows, whatever. That's how we're going to live. But Star Wars in concert was fabulous. But I, you know, it is one thing to see Star Wars music live. It must be another thing entirely to see Star Wars music live conducted by John Williams.
It really is. It's just, it's powerful. And in between sets, he'll, you know, turn around and stand on his podium and tell little stories and talk about things. And I remember in the 2016 concert, you know, at one point, it was right before he played some music from TFA. He told this darling little story about talking with JJ about scoring TFA. And they said he wasn't really sure if he wasn't really sure if he was up to doing it, and sat down with JJ and they went through the script and saw the, you know, what was going to happen. And he said he just absolutely fell in love with both Daisy Ridley and the character of Rey. And the way he put it, he said, I cannot allow anyone else to score her theme. I have to do this.
Yeah, he's very protective of that theme and of that character.
Yes.
Which is good to see. It's good to see that he's...
get those little...
Yeah, he's almost treating it like his granddaughter, I guess, in a way.
In a way, yeah. So it's beautiful to hear those little stories and feel that connection and that power and passion behind him. It's connecting to all of us, right?
Oh yeah, like you said off the top, it's impossible to picture Star Wars without his music. It just does not work. It's try to envision Star Wars without the Force. Like
just a story.
You're stripping out the genes, the DNA of what makes Star Wars Star Wars. Just can't be done. Favorite soundtrack overall? Is it A New Hope, just as it is your favorite movie?
It's hard. It's the classic. How do you do better than the original? It's been with me so long. But as you said, the Last Jedi soundtrack is kind of a best of, and I'm just really digging it.
Yeah, I think The Last Jedi, the movie itself may not be in my top three. I don't know. It may edge in at three. It may just slip out. I'm not sure. It's still in flux for me. The soundtrack is in my top three. For sure.
Totally.
And it's just a matter of letting it marinate a little bit more and catch up. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's right there. And the New Hope soundtrack is obviously groundbreaking, but it doesn't have Imperial March. It doesn't have Yoda's theme. There's some stuff missing there.
There is.
But it also has things that the other scores don't have.
It's still one of those things. We talked about the vinyl. Is I can put the LP on and I can turn up the volume. And even though it's the opening theme song and we've heard it hundreds of times, when you turn it up and you hear it in kind of a controlled environment, it still gets you.
Oh yeah.
You know,
I don't get to do that very often. I've usually got too many ears around that. It's too loud. And my kids love when I put the Star Wars music on in the car. That's all they want me to put on. That's all. It's amazing that they say, Dad, put on which soundtrack, kids. They'll say The Force Awakens. That's usually the one that comes out. Sometimes they'll say Rogue One. Whatever. You tell me. You're not asking me to put on Barney or any other like kiddie music. You're asking me to put on Star Wars. Just say the word.
Done. Yeah.
But yeah, I don't get... I have some really big tower speakers that I'm that I really, really love, mm. and they're really good, and I have a great mm-hmm. amp to go with it. Mm-hmm. I just don't get the chance often enough to stretch its legs. But when I do, if there's that odd time when the kids are out of the house, my wife's taking them out for whatever reason, you best believe that's what I'm doing. I'm throwing on an LP or a CD if I don't have yep. it, and I just crank it. Peels oh, the yeah. paint off the walls. It's awesome.
It is. It's fantastic. I've had people over, and I've demonstrated that and other items of demo worthiness with my system, and people are just amazed at how the pictures don't just vibrate off the wall.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've you're a bit techie this way too. So I hope you get, like, I've bi-amped my speakers.
Yeah.
And they just sing.
I greatly appreciate that.
They just sing, man. I don't need the 7.1. So I just send double the power to the front towers and whew. Yep. It yeah. does. If I crank it, it rattles the floors. And I don't have a subwoofer.
Ooh, interesting. I am probably going to get a phono amp for my turntable just because.
Why not?
It doesn't I've got it so it doesn't necessarily need it. But come on, let's be real. It's going
to
happen.
There's one good reason to do that. It's a good enough reason alone. Because the Star Wars soundtrack's done.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've got two, because I've got that 40th anniversary A New Hope LP set, and I've also got the Rogue One soundtrack on vinyl now, which I've really... Interestingly enough, sorry, tangent here, but when Rogue One came out, I just did not love the soundtrack.
Yeah.
It just... It didn't took time. Work for me. But a year later, and... I don't know if it's because I got the LP. It's tangentially because I got the LP, therefore I'm listening to it a lot more. I've really started to notice a lot more of the subtleties in the music that he wrote, and I've really fell in love with it now.
I really do love that soundtrack. It's better than some mm-hmm. of John Williams, which is maybe a little blasphemous to say, but I like Rogue One soundtrack better than some of the Star Wars scores.
I would definitely rank it above the prequels.
I put it above Attack of the Clones. Attack of the Clones borrowed too much from the Phantom Menace for it to stand on its own for me.
Sure.
But yeah, it's really, really good. And it's especially the back half of the album. Like once you get to Edu and meeting Krennic meeting Vader, then the soundtrack really picks up. So I mean, there's a lot of people who go, it's not John Williams, it's not hitting home with me. And I just say, just give it time, give it another spin. And really, like for me, the way that soundtrack grew on me is it started from the end and worked its way back.
Like, I can appreciate that, yeah.
The first, I don't know, 9-10 tracks, I was like, okay, this is okay, this is good, fine. But once we got to the end with, you know, the climax on Scarif and Vader doing his thing.
The Vader scene.
And the end credits, like, it's all phenomenal. And then from there, I just kept... going back and go, yeah, this is great too, and this is great. And suddenly I'm halfway through the soundtrack and I'm like, this is a really solid score, considering he had 4 weeks to do it.
Yeah, especially because of that. And what he did in that time, holy cow, it's amazing.
It's really quite special.
I'm really impressed.
I'd like to see what he can do with, you know, whatever the regular timetable is. Let's let Michael Giacchino do that. But let's jump back to John Williams and just... A New Hope is your favorite score? I think that's what
it's my favorite classic score. Yeah, it's my favorite classic.
Any favorite cues, themes?
It changes over time. It's a mood thing, as music will do. Like right now, the ringtone on my phone, because I've just been in that mood lately, it's the Trench Run.
Yeah. That's a whole good, that's a great sequence.
There's some classic symphony work going on there that tied with, you know, the action sequence that we see and we dream about every night. That's my jam right now.
You know what? You know, got me in the Last Jedi soundtrack. It's the cue where Chewie flies the Falcon into the trench on Crait. And it picks up.
It does, yes.
It just blasts right into, I think it's Here They Come on the A New Hope soundtrack. if I'm not mistaken. It's where, you know, where the TIE fighters attack the Falcon after they escape the Death Star.
Yeah. 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 Right back into the classic.
And that just hit me right between the eyes, or right between the ears, I guess, in my first screening. I can't believe they went there. It was amazing.
Beautiful connectivity for reaching. There was so much in this movie that reached back for 40 years, and the music was a big piece of it.
Oh, for sure. From Yoda to Leia's theme to Here They Come. Oh, so good all around.
Masterful.
All right, so cheers to John Williams.
Yes.
Well, before we move on, he is interested in 9. He's confessed that if he can do it, he will do it. Which I imagine it's his job to turn down at this point in his career.
Oh yeah.
How do you feel about going forward with Rian Johnson's trilogy? Is it still his trilogy to turn down, or do you think they should just let Williams do the Skywalker saga, end it, and then let Johnson do something new if that's what he chooses?
Well, I'm intrigued. So I'll go back a step before I answer that. I'm really intrigued that he's writing the theme for Han, for Solo, a Star Wars movie, but that's all he's doing.
Yeah, bizarre. It's a little bit bizarre. Welcome, but bizarre.
So I'm glad he's doing it. It's interesting he's only doing the one. So then it's, well, are you busy with other projects? Are you getting wrapped into work on JJ's movie? Because he scored The Last Jedi much differently. Instead of doing it at the end of edit, he scored it along the way, from what I understand.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. Rian was giving him a cut of the movie.
Yeah.
With the music already spliced in, and just said, you know, just do this.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a much different process.
It was much more earlier in the process. Instead of, you know, a lot of times the score is the last thing he would do, in post. So.
Yeah, Williams was done in early 2017, I think, with scoring.
Yeah.
Which is really bizarre.
Kind of made me go, what? Huh? That sounds early.
Yeah, no doubt.
But okay. And it worked out brilliantly. So, you know, kudos for him. So I'm wondering if he's suggesting, or if he has time baked into his schedule to do a similar process with JJ for number 9. Don't know. And then, back to your question about the trilogy. Well, So part of me worries about his age at this point. What is he physically able to do? And dear God, what happens when he passes away? He's mid to late 80s.
I think he's 86 right now.
Yeah.
And he recently said that, I think he was speaking to Variety when he confessed that, yeah, he wants to do episode 9. But he also said he has no intentions to retire. He said he loves music. This keeps him feeling young and keeps him inspired. So he's just going to keep doing it until he can't.
I absolutely believe that about him. This is his passion. It's that thing of, I don't care if I get paid or not. Of course I'm doing this kind of thing.
Yeah. So I don't know if there's you know, a rule in place at Lucasfilm that says, hey, these are Star Wars movies or these are saga movies. Johnny's our guy. If you can just ask him first, okay? If he says no, fine, move on. But let's run this past John Williams first.
It does kind of make you wonder if he has a right of first refusal contract.
I don't even know if it would be a contract so much as it would be just sort of courtesy. Like, John has done so much for Star Wars. We go to him first out of respect.
That I absolutely believe, but seeing as Hollywood is run by lawyers.
Yes. what am I thinking?
You never know. Yeah, sorry. Rielly, apologies. So I don't know if he would be involved in Rian's new trilogy or not. If you think about it as objectively as possible, which is hard to do because we're too invested, because of his advanced age, there's a risk. And maybe you just take it one at a time.
That might be it. That might be the way to go.
Yeah.
But then if you have to, you know, you pass the reins off to somebody else who just might be like, I want to do something totally different, but I have to use, I have to use all this stuff that came before. And if it's John Williams, I don't have a problem with that, but still, I'm not going to get to do my thing.
Well, remember, a number of people said after Rogue One, they said, well, what if they're preparing Giacchino to potentially step in for John Williams at some point? And based upon what he's done, I would not object to that.
Yeah, now, well, they have John Powell now with the Han Solo project. Oh,
yeah. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, I guess we have a bunch of guys being groomed, or at least being looked at or considered.
Yeah, so it's good to have options in case the maestro is not available.
Absolutely. All right, let's wind it up here. Number four to close off your Mount Rushmore of Star Wars.
All right, so I apologize. I'm going to pull a Corey.
Uh-oh.
I got to loophole this slightly.
Boy, his legacy really endures through all the shows, huh? He's not even here.
He's not even here, and he's here. That man, I swear. So number four for me, in keeping in the spirit of these are personal, right?
Absolutely.
Is I have to give credit to my co-hosts, Eric and Robert.
Well, of course I have to let, that's no loophole.
It's technically a loophole, but I was thinking about, I was like, well, I can't give credit to one without the other, because it was the three of us that founded our group, that went into podcasting, that do everything we do.
No, this is okay.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that. You know, the work that we've done together in creating this lightsaber combat group, we are, it's going to sound nerdy as hell, we are bringing Star Wars into real life for people.
Sure. Yeah, it's making it a real tangible activity.
Since we were children, we've played with lightsabers, everybody, and pretended this was real. And now we're making it a real thing. This, and so as a result, there's this intense feeling of this thing I've created, I'm now part of something that's bigger, which everybody tends to enjoy being part of something that's bigger than they are. And literally in the 2 years that we've had the group going, watching people come into the group, get very passionate about this martial arts activity, which I'm not very good at, to be honest, but I go anyway, and literally have it, literally see it have such a positive effect on people's lives. Because a lot of times when you study martial arts, it's not just about the physical training, but there's a mental training aspect as well. So I've seen people get over personal struggles because of the training that we're going through. And we'll sit down half, you know, if you really go into the program, half of what we teach you is we sit down and we talk about what's going on. What are you struggling with? Not just in your training, but in your home life. Hey, I see something's bothering you. Let's talk about this. So there's this really strong coaching aspect that goes beyond the lightsabers. So seeing people improve their lives and improve their situations, get over mental stress, get over drama. I've seen people quit smoking and get healthier. I mean, how do you not feel good about that? And doing it in the Star Wars way. Oh, my God.
That's got to be really gratifying. That's got to be really cool.
It's so awesome. Yeah, we were at practice last night, and I was not feeling great, so I'm pretty much just sitting around watching people. But watching these people, I'm thinking, wow, you've only been with us for 6 months, and I see your technique improve. And I can sit down with Eric in private sessions and say, hey, what do you see going on with this guy? Yeah, he's picking up his training really well, but, you know, he's got this mental block, and there's something going on, and we're going to have to sit down and talk about this for him to get over it. And said, yeah, I figured that was a mental thing too. He's overly analytical, and he's analyzing things too much, and it's getting in his way. Eric goes, yeah, no, that's exactly what it is. So, yeah, we're judging people. But
there's nothing. We're all about judging people here.
Absolutely.
Judging all of you listening harshly.
Right now, you don't even know it.
You're all graded, and there's no bell curve.
It's too late. Just give up. We've already judged you. So it's fascinating. It's so good to be part of something like that. And then to get your nerd on at the same time. Holy cow.
That's cool. And then you guys set up the podcast 53 episodes ago?
Yep. 1 year ago, almost just over exactly. And that's been just another huge aspect of this, which for me has just made me dive into Star Wars even deeper than I have the last 40 years. And it's such an amazing feeling. And then part of this is your fault, and part of it is the guys over at the Nerd Room that now I'm starting to get into collecting. Sorry, not sorry. You know, I've got my first 6-scale sideshow. I've got another one on order. My Funko Pop collection is growing. I've got to get a case now.
Oh, no.
Yes.
You've been ensnared.
The comic books are starting to weed their way in.
No. The tentacles.
You don't hear any resistance in my voice either, do you?
No, it's just like, all right, here you go. Take my money. Here's my PIN number. Go nuts.
And then, okay, you'll love this. I've got a guy who does my taxes.
Oh, here we go.
He's a big collector, too. So he has sat here and helped me figure out how to make all these collectible things a tax write-off for me.
No.
Yes.
Wow, I want to quote Newt Gunray and ask, is that legal?
It is. Oh, based upon the business that I have and the work I'm doing, it is absolutely legal. I will make it legal.
That's phenomenal. So I need to set up a business then and start writing off all my collectibles.
There's so many advantages. There's so many advantages. It's fantastic. He's like, do you go to the movies? Well, yes. That's a tax write-off. I think I should go to the movies more often. He's like, yes, you should.
What?
Yes. It helps when you work in any sort of media or entertainment related field, according to the US IRS regulations. There's so much I can write off. It's phenomenal.
Wow. You're taking loopholes to a whole new level.
I could school Corey on this stuff.
Oh man. Well, that's not hard to do, mm-hmm. Let's be honest.
Well, true. Fair.
Oh, I love that guy. But yeah.
But so let me give you an example of how amazing podcasting is. It's both frightening and amazing at the same time. I don't know how much listeners understand how much time goes into creating any episode. If you know, we put out an hour-long episode, it's a lot more than just, hey, we sat down, press record, and an hour later we're done. Let's upload that. All right, thanks very much. We'll see you next week. So much more than that.
So much more.
Our episode 52, which was what we called our season finale of season one or year one.
That was a 3-hour beast.
It was the longest podcast we've had to date. Oh, my God.
Was it not literally 3 hours?
It was like 3 hours and one minute.
Yeah, full 301. Oh, I remember that. I was like, wow. Like I've not wanted to tip that 3-hour mark, and I've hit 259, but I'd never hit 3.
Yeah. Well, I edited it down from almost 4 hours worth of tape.
Oh, jeez.
So I was trying, and that's where we talk about. I can pull half a second of silence out of here to shorten it. You know, get it, just really digging into the details. So, if you consider that. I had to drive 45 minutes down to the winery where we recorded. We spent about 4 hours at the winery recording. And then I had to drive home another 45 minutes. I spent about an hour and a half on the guest interview just recording. I then spent, because this was a year in review, I spent about 2 hours doing research on all the things we wanted to talk about in the main episode. I spent 3 hours editing the interview itself, which got down to about an hour worth of the final take. And then I spent 10 hours editing the main episode.
Oh, my God.
All in all, I spent 19 hours on that one episode.
Oh, God, I'm going to vomit. I usually do my podcast standing up. I've changed things up here, and I'm like, my knees are buckling here for you.
Oh, I'm sorry. It hurt. It really hurt at the end. I'm just like, oh my God, just get to the end. I'm almost there. It's the final 10 minutes of tape. I can just, I was so tempted to just be like, skip to the end. You're done. I was like, no, I can't do that. I gotta
see
do
it
the
through.
Process.
See it through.
Gotta do it. Gotta persevere. I was done. I hit upload and I went to my sofa. I grabbed a beer and I'm like, I'm done for the rest of the day. I don't think I moved. I was physically exhausted.
Yeah, it's like we say it's a labor of love, but there's a lot of labor involved. It's quite the thing. And the deeper you get into it, you know, I don't know if people think that the more you do it, the more streamlined your process will get and the more efficient you'll get. I guess that is true in certain aspects.
Parts of that, that's a true statement in some areas, but then there's new things that you take on or other things that happen. And
yeah, you build out continually learning. Yeah, you build out one area of the show into this, or you expand that, or you add a second, third, fourth, and fifth podcast.
Who does that? That's strange.
You keep giving yourself more and more and more to do, and it's, wait a minute, this is out of control. But I love it.
Yeah.
It's chaos, but I love it.
I do too. As you know, I don't bring that up as an example to complain about it.
No.
It hurt, but God, I love doing this stuff.
Like, I've complained about editing and all the stuff that goes, you know, the show notes and prepping the show and the editing and all that other garbage. But it's somehow become like part of the day to day. It's part of what I've done for the last 2+ years. And if, you know, I didn't do it for a week just during the holidays, about 10 days. I didn't look at the mic. I didn't make show notes and it felt weird.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's what it is.
Yeah.
It's just good.
It's the very definition of a labor of love.
Indeed.
And so all this stuff that we do, going back to Robert and Eric, is I got contacted by a guy in Vegas last night who wants to start his own lightsaber group. And we've had this fantastic exchange between last night and today and you know, asking questions and getting lots of answers and hearing more about what he wants to do. And you end up taking a moment and stepping back from a moment for a minute and think about how this thing that you started really randomly 2 years ago has turned into a thing where now people are asking if we're interested in starting another chapter and growing upon, you know, expanding upon what we've started. And it's just, it's humbling.
It's scary. It's humbling. It's all kinds of things, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, there's a first aspect of, I don't know if we're ready for that. But a lot of times you're never ready for what you go do. And you kind of in hindsight realize, I was as ready as I could be. So who knows what's going to happen with this? But when people start contacting you and you talk about these things, it's just, it really helps you understand what an impact you're having even beyond what you can see.
Yeah. Yeah. Every now and then we get a note from a listener and, you know, they'll say, you know, Stu Baca recently left us an amazing note of gratitude. And it was so humbling. And we've gotten a couple over the last couple of years and it's just, okay. I mean, this is why we do this. At first it was purely for us because we like Star Wars. And then you start seeing that people actually enjoy what you do. And that's why you keep stepping up to the mic every week and putting out something new and putting your heart into it and hoping that it continues to work for people.
Yeah. We've said from the beginning, you know, as long as 3 people listen to our show, we'll keep doing this because it's just fun. It's a lot more than 3 people listen to our show. I'm still not always sure why, but bless them for doing it.
We all sort of have that imposter syndrome, right? Like, nobody's going to, why is anybody listening?
Yeah.
They do, and they tell us they like it. Okay, thanks. Yeah.
yeah, we, you know, we've got a diverse set of topics, so we kind of span a large spectrum based upon, you know, it's a podcast from a lightsaber group. So yeah, we want to talk about lightsaber fighting, which interests some people, but probably less interesting to other people. And then we want to talk about Star Wars stuff and dive really deep, because this guy keeps sending us what if questions that take us into rabbit holes.
I think that guy probably owes you a question.
We can always use content, whoever that guy is, if you're listening.
I'll talk to him. I'll talk to him.
Oh, excellent. Good.
All right.
So lots of different topics, and it ends up being a little bit of something for a lot of different people. And no one has ever come back to us going, I wish you didn't do as much of that. It's like, all right. Well, we'll just keep doing what we're doing.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right. So let's run down your Mount Rushmore of Star Wars one more time. You had Obi-Wan, Leia / Carrie Fisher, the Maestro, John Williams, and your co-hosts, Eric and Robert.
That's them.
Yeah, I like that you had a little bit of everything, some on-screen, some off-screen, and, of course, some personal stuff there with the co-hosts.
Had to.
That's the way this gets done over at Worthy of Recognition.
Star Wars is personal.
Yep, as Carrie Fisher said, right? It's about family. This is all our space family, right?
Yep, absolutely true.
Rito dysfunctional.
Can argue or deny? Indeed.
All right, Steve, this is where we say goodbye. But before we do, why don't you tell everybody the many places where they can find you?
We are in many different corners of the internet. It can all be found from our website at sandiegosabres.net. We're on Facebook, Twitter. I found out we have a Snapchat. Didn't realize that until a week or two ago.
Congratulations.
Somebody failed to tell me that. I'm like, yeah, thanks, I think. I don't know. I don't do Snapchat, so I'm not sure. We're on Tumblr. We're on Twitter. We got all the space, all the check marks checked. So sandiegosabres.net. You can watch our page. We put out all the podcast stuff on both Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. I forgot to mention Instagram. And we've got a group there where we talk about all the lightsaber training and the events that we do. We do a lot of events. Our last episode, we talked about all the events we have coming up in 2018. And we've got at least a dozen events or more planned for 2018. And there'll probably be at least that many that come up randomly ad hoc. So we're going to be busy this year as a group.
That's awesome, man. It's good to hear that you guys have a full firm schedule going. That's awesome.
It's fun. I mean, you hear about, you know, folks in the 501st, they're always doing troops and doing charity stuff, and we're not dissimilar to that.
That's amazing. And you get, I mean, the 501st is a tough gig to get into. There's a lot of things involved, a lot of standards, which are good. I'm not saying it's
like
elitist or exclusionary thing. No. But with lightsaber fighting, like, you can just walk up as a total rookie and just hop in.
And we encourage people to, and it happens almost every single week. There's somebody new that shows up, and some of them try it out and go, not for me. Great, fantastic. And some of them stick around, and they've become amazing fighters and other things. And one of the approaches we take is we never want to charge people for this stuff. We do this completely for free.
That is so cool.
There are other lightsaber groups. They do it as more of a formal martial arts program, and you sign up for, say, a six-week program for $60. And I'm not saying anything's right or wrong, but our approach has been, we are passionate about Star Wars and passionate about lightsaber combat, so, you know, just show up. And if you don't have gear or a saber at first, that's fine. We always have spares. Just come try it out. So you know one of our common fans is a gentleman named Riley.
Yes.
We all know Riley. Lives about an hour north of me.
That's pretty cool. Has he come down?
He came down for our holiday party. So we've hung out a couple of times.
That's pretty rad.
He is committed. He has a crazy schedule, but he is committed that at some point he will come down and practice with us.
Very cool.
And the newer show, I think you've probably heard of, Tatooine Sons.
Yes. David Jesse.
Those guys also. Yep. And the boys. they live nearby as well. And so they've talked about, we've talked about, yeah, you know, come down, and they want to come down and check it out too. So it's a small world.
It really is.
It's fantastic. So, and I mean, whether you get into it or not, who doesn't just love swinging a lightsaber around?
Because you know, half these people at the start anyway are making the noise. If not in their head, then even out loud.
I still do.
There you go. And on that note, Steve, man, this was a blast. Thank you so much for coming by.
I appreciate you inviting me. This is, you know, any opportunity to talk about this stuff, I'm in. You know that.
Yeah, and I'm sure we will catch up again soon, and we'll talk about more Star Wars stuff. But this was really great, and I have to say thank you for being a powerful friend. Thank you for your support, most of all. And amen. May the Force be with you, good sir.
And with you.
All right, everybody. That was Steve from San Diego Sabres Radio Podcast. Go check out their awesome podcast. And if you're in the SoCal area, you know, you got to go check those guys out and swing a few sabers or so. And that will do it for Worthy of Recognition for this month. And if you want to, this podcast is released early to our Patreon supporters, lovingly called The Powerful Friends. If you want to become a powerful friend, all you have to do is head over to patreon.com/tumblingsaber. Check it out. $2-3 a month. It opens up a whole new world of fandom to you. So if you like this podcast, there's a lot more where that came from. patreon.com/tumblingsaber. Check it out. And for everybody else, thank you, everybody, for listening, and have yourselves an excellent weekend. And we'll talk to you in the next episode of the Tumbling Saber Podcast. Bye for now.